want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And good evening, boys and girls, and Liberty Patriots, and even you SOB jackbooted thugs alike. It is the hour of power again. It's that time of the week. It's Thursday Night Truth, TNT Radio, on the My View Matters radio network. And there's no taking time off for holidays. We don't pull that crap here. We keep it going. We understand there was not a show on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, and that's to be understandable. And plus, Mr. Springsteen, who runs the My View Matters radio network, has been a little bit under the weather. So we definitely hope he's getting better if he's listening in to us live or via the archives. You always can listen on the archives. And again, if you want to call in, the show number, as always, is 858-683-1326. 858-683-1326. I am your host, Dale the Truth. And the date is Thursday, December the 26th. And it will be our last show of the year, of course, just because that's the way we do this calendar of ours, where next week we'll say Happy New Year. And will it really be a Happy New Year? Well, we'll talk a little bit in a couple of minutes here about a review of Liberty in 2013, how it was not a very good for Liberty year, a good year for Liberty overall. We had a few good breakthroughs, but we will talk about that in a moment. But we will start out, as always, with This Week in History. And when we do that, we mentioned last week's show the importance of the event that came up on Monday, which was 100 years ago this week, the private Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor a reserve, took over your American money system. 1913, exactly 100 years ago Monday, so now 100 years and 3 days, that the Federal Reserve has been screwing up the money system. That's why your dollar is worth less than 5 cents of a dollar now, because of them taking it over. And of course, if we go back on this date, very important date, on this date in 1776, we had the Battle of Trenton. If you don't know about the Battle of Trenton, then you might be in one of those government indoctrination camps called the public schools, and you probably weren't taught history. Going forward to this week in history, going way back to this week in 1683, we were talking about 390 years ago, was when the Puritans mandated a 12-man jury. And that's very important to today, because we are very much up on jury rights and jury members' rights. But again, since we're talking about the Battle of Trenton in 1776, I think maybe we need to remember back about that Declaration of Independence from that same year, as it was done to our forefathers in King George's time. It's also being done now, and that's why I said it hasn't been a good year for liberty. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers, made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount in payment of their salaries, erected a multitude of new offices, and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Want to know where that came from? Do some research. 100 years ago, the Federal Reserve took over the money system, and we got some principles of what should be constitutional money. If you want to know about the principles of constitutional money, look at Article 1, Section 10 of your Constitution. No state shall coin money, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Do you really think they know what gold and silver look like out in the marketplace? We had a lot of people just spent this Christmas season out there buying all kinds of gifts with money they didn't have to buy stuff they didn't want to impress people they didn't like. And were they using gold and silver? No, they were using the Federal Reserve note. Article 1, Section 8 says the Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof. Our forefathers intended money to be gold and silver coin. This because credit debt paper money is inherent thievery. It has no intrinsic value, and as we see for 100 years straight, it is easily inflated or deflated. You see, folks, only three federal crimes existed at America's founding, and they were one, treason, two, counterfeiting, and three, piracy on the high seas. Think about that. There were only three federal crimes at our nation's founding. Treason, counterfeiting, and piracy on the high seas. And today, Americans are routinely plundered and raped and pillaged by thousands of unconstitutionally treasonous acts, entrapment schemes, checkpoints, radar traps, insurance schemes, regulations, seatbelt laws, and so on. Dan Pilla Sr., do you know who Dan Pilla is? Dan Pilla is a gentleman who put out the Freedom Calendar. And Dan Pilla said in 1990, the final battle for freedom in Christianity will be over the money problem. And until that is solved, there can be no true application of Christianity. Again, let's go back to the law. You want to talk about law? Leviticus was the law in the Bible. Leviticus 19, 35-36 said, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in metered, in weight, or in measure, just balances, just weights, and a just liquid shall you have. U.S. Supreme Court, 1882, said the government of the United States is one of delegated, limited, and enumerated powers. Every valid act of Congress must find in the Constitution some warrant for its passage. That bears repeating. Every act of Congress must find in the Constitution some warrant for its passage. So in other words, if it's in the Constitution, it's already there. If it's not in there, it shouldn't be passed. Look at the three federal crimes, again, that existed at the founding of our country. Treason, counterfeiting, and piracy on the high seas. We see what they've done with treason. We see what they've done with their spying system. We've seen what they've done with the money system. So piracy on the high seas is the least of our concerns. But in 1886, George Bancroft said the Constitution is confided for its preservation to the inmost thought and affection of the people of the United States. They must be its ultimate guardians. And maybe you know this guy, Charles Lindbergh. Charles Lindbergh said the Federal Reserve Act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth. When the president signed this bill, he wrote this in 1913. He wrote this, oh, I don't know, maybe 2 days before they signed the Federal Reserve bill. He said when Congress passes and president signs this bill, the invisible government by the monetary power will be legalized. The people must make a declaration of independence, taking control of Congress. The worst legislative crime of the ages is perpetrated by this Federal Reserve. So that kind of tells you about this week in history and how it went down with the good old Federal Reserve Act. You know, that Federal Reserve, that's neither federal nor a reserve. So now we'll fast forward to current times. And I know a lot of people like to do these reviews of the year. So if we're going to do a review of the year, I think our audience remembers what happened this year, so I don't get caught up in these things too much. But if we're going to do a review of the year, we should do a review of liberty. And as I aforementioned said, the year for liberty has not been that great, thanks to government. Been just a few disasters that the government caused. I guess we could start with Obamacare, right? Obamacare was supposed to bend the cost curve, quote-unquote, downward. The central planners had lots of time to perfect their scheme. It reminds me of the Patriot Act, how the thing was in the planning way back in the Clinton administration, and it finally got unveiled under the George W. Bush administration. But just like the Patriot Act, Obamacare central planners had a lot of time to prepare for this. For a generation, we had the brightest socialist wonks who were focusing on healthcare policy. I remember 20 years ago, I remember in college writing a piece about the socialization of healthcare and about how healthcare reform made me sick. And that was when Hillary Rodham Clinton was pushing it via her husband back in 1993, 94, 95. So what did we get after a generation of the brightest socialist wonks focusing on this policy? We got Soviet-style consumer service coming to America. They want the single-payer system, and that's what their goal is the single-payer system. Now, what else do we see in the world of liberty this year? We saw the quote-unquote government shutdown. Maybe we should call it the non-government shutdown that never was. But the quote-unquote government shutdown. The real disaster was the unnecessary panic over the government shutdown, because everybody gets scared about what they're going to do without the government. Well, maybe you shouldn't be so damn dependent on the government that you wouldn't be worried about a real shutdown. Maybe you shouldn't have your mouths wide open trying to suck at the nipple of the big government, and you wouldn't be worried when they pull that nipple away, would you? We were told the zoos would shut down and the baby pandas would starve. And the mainstream press made it sound like America might not survive even slightly limited government. They were happy to echo the big government politicians' claims, Democrats and Republicans, that there was no wasteful or stupid spending that they could cut. Frankenstein's monster herself, Frankenstein's monster Nancy Pelosi of California, said, "The cupboard is bare. There are no more cuts to make." Nothing to cut? Really? Really, Pelosi? Government spends $3.8 trillion a year, and you say there's nothing to cut. And, of course, many Republicans, including House Speaker John Boehner, that's what we call him here, John Boehner, idiot Republican House Speaker, you know, the crying game Boehner from Ohio, he was just as eager to spend the money as the Democrats were. You know, we know the rhetoric was that there's this big difference between the two parties. And I have to tell you, I remember listening to neocon Michael Medved as I was just flipping through the radio dials, stuck in a ridiculous traffic that I endure every day. And I'm listening to Michael Medved, chief neocon himself, talking about, oh, there's such a big difference. There are so many differences between the two major parties. They're so far apart. I had immediately turned that idiot off because they weren't far apart. The only spending reduction that Republicans accomplished in the entire, past few years of the Obama administration, if you go back 4 years, 5 years, was the so-called sequester, which really happened by legal default because the two parties couldn't reach an agreement. And as you know, that's the one thing the government is supposed to do, is pass a budget. Think back to what I said earlier about what were the only three federal crimes when our country was founded: treason, counterfeiting, and piracy on the high seas. And then what is the only thing they have to do? Pass a budget. So what's the only thing they don't do? Pass a budget. The sequester instituted cuts of about $85 billion with a B, dollars a year, a mere tiny little sliver, as I hold my index finger and my thumb, about a couple centimeters apart, a mere sliver of the $3.8 trillion budget. And an even smaller, still greatly tinier sliver of the $17 trillion debt. Yet even those modest cuts will not happen now under the new congressional agreement, because you have some Republicans who are upset that the sequester was going to make small cuts to the military budget. And they were so worried about their connections to the military-industrial complex. And they were so scared. They were pissing their depends over another quote-unquote phony partial government shutdown and how it might hurt their chances, and you guessed it, the 2014 elections. So they gave up the modest spending discipline that this sequester would impose. And Speaker of the House John Boehner said that if we wanted to keep the sequester, we were ridiculous. He lambasted conservatives and the quote-unquote Tea Party. Sound familiar? We know Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said he wanted to punch the Tea Party in the nose. He called us bullies, but he said he wanted to punch us in the nose. If that old, decrepit little big government wench, Mitch McConnell, had the balls to punch us in the nose, tell him come do it. Don't bunch of your frat boys, all drunken and high on potential power they might gain under your control, but come yourself if you're going to punch us in the nose, McConnell. Have the balls to do it yourself, but you don't. You have no balls. And then you had Representative Paul Ryan. Remember him? Oh, that was Mitt Romney's running mate. And all these neocons were all excited about Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Remember, he was once called a fanatical budget slasher who wanted to push Granny off of a cliff. People claimed that he was reading Ayn Rand and was a cutthroat capitalist. When in reality, he abandoned the meager budget cuts that were already scheduled. So that's what we got this year, folks. The guy who in 2012 was supposed to be a fanatical budget slasher and a aficionado of Ayn Rand, in 2013, he abandoned the meager budget cuts that were already scheduled. And this is what I mean, that it was not a great year for liberty. I suppose Republicans feel they have no choice. They face Democrats who will cut nothing. They hope to win the Senate. They hope to win the Senate back next election. And they realize that these spending cuts are not particularly popular with the people who have their mouths wrapped around the nipples of the government. Whatever will they do if we pull the government nipples away? We will have to live on our own. The horror, the terror of it all. Americans say they want less spending, but then they fight for farm subsidies, flood insurance, economic development schemes. Most federal spending funds Social Security, Medicare, and the military. Even citizens who sound fiscally conservative, especially the elderly ones, don't want the military or Social Security or Medicare cuts. This is also the year we found out just how much the federal government spies on its own citizens. And I remember a gentleman over at Reason Magazine annoyed fellow libertarians by saying that the privacy he lost to data mining seemed a small price to pay for surveillance against terrorism. I understand there may be 100 other things that the government does that bother him more than data mining, but it's just the fact that it happens. It's kind of like the people who got pissed off over ATM fees by their banks. You know, the ATM fees at the machines that they chose to use for the banks that they chose to pick themselves. But yet they don't get pissed off when they see what the government is doing. Oh, I understand they're all in bed together. Don't get me wrong. This is the corporatism, the fascism that we have with the corporations and the government are all in bed together. Look, I'm constantly angry at the government for lots of things. And data mining is one of those things. I agree. But for people who have these emails and these messages flying through the air, for all we know, our political enemies already read them. But it's very upsetting, though, that the NSA, you know, the National Security Agency, an organization that should not even exist, that the NSA goes far beyond what the government first claimed. And President Barack Obama assured us that the NSA does not read our emails or listen to our phone calls. But it turns out they sure do sometimes. You're listening to the TNT Radio Show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters Radio Network. It is our 2013 year in review, and we will take our bottom of the hour break, and we will go to the phones after this. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
advertisers. Here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right, we're back here. We had to get that bottom of the hour break stuff out of the way. Coming back into our bumper music there with Longest Day by Iron Maiden. And I know a lot of our listeners are big fans of the bumper music. And I think we got a good friend, Paul, from Stop It on the line here. Paul was probably banging his head to the Iron Maiden. Paul, how are you?
I'm trying to come down from that rocking high. So, hey, listen, you alluded to the military-industrial complex just today. Yep. Had an opportunity to view a YouTube video featuring a guy by the name of Tom Hartman. Well, Tom made use of an actual video from 1961 featuring none other than President Dwight David Eisenhower, Republican, I might add. And in that, it was his farewell speech. And in that farewell speech, President Eisenhower gave us, the citizens of the U.S., strong, strong warning about the military-industrial complex. If you don't mind, let me just read this two-sentence excerpt from this article. It says, in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether it is sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. Potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. So here's a guy who is a five-star American general, led us through a lot of conflict in Europe, in World War II and the Korean War, was widely regarded as a very successful leader, and he certainly was the beneficiary of the military-industrial complex. And he was a Republican to boot, yet he recognized the huge potential for harm to the American way of life if we didn't keep this complex in check.
Yep. And right after he left office, Paul, right after Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was my father's favorite president, right after Dwight D. Eisenhower left office and he warned us against this military-industrial complex, well, following him right into the Oval Office was a gentleman himself, a Democrat at that, who had been commander of motor torpedo boats during World War II in the South Pacific, had been a congressman and a senator, and that was John F. Kennedy. And John F. Kennedy, hard to believe that at the time, Eisenhower, you can read the book called The Politician, put out by Robert Welch in the early days of John Birch Society, they even were concerned about how big government Dwight D. Eisenhower was compared to the type of politicians like the Tafts that they wanted to see in there. But JFK came into office right after Dwight D. Eisenhower left office, and he gave a speech that we've played on the airwaves here. I know that Ed's played it coming into shows, and I've played it via my music before. And John F. Kennedy gave a speech warning us about secret societies, and he gave that speech to the American Newspaper Publishers Association warning about big government and globalism. And, oh, yeah, they killed him about 6 months later, Paul.
Well, and Dale, I think that point should register in every one of your listeners' minds, because remember, Dwight David Eisenhower made this speech as a farewell speech.
Yeah.
And John F. Kennedy
chose to.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And Kennedy, on the other hand, put it there early in his administration, and lo and behold, look who died and look who didn't.
Yep. So, and people that think that we're making this stuff up, Paul, like I said, all they had to do is go look it up. I've been a defender of Reagan for a long time, and I've had a discussion this week with some folks of mine who are more libertarian-minded, probably even than I am, hard to believe, and they would tell me they thought maybe that Reagan was also a puppet, and I warned them. I said, yeah, but here's the thing. Reagan also, when campaigning for president, was talking about how he would not be controlled by the New World Order and he would not be controlled by the globalists. And he was in office, a few months before he was shot. And again, if people think that we're making this stuff up, go look up, why is it? Don't believe me. Go do your research. Go do a start page search or Google search if you want them following you around. But why is it that the shooter, remember the gentleman who shot Ronald Reagan, Paul?
Reagan was shot by him.
Hinckley?
Hinckley, yeah.
Yep. Why is it that a day before he was shot, and you can look this up, Hinckley's brother was having lunch with Neil Bush, brother of George Herbert Walker Bush? So, you know, people can make whatever they will, or they can go look up the history of it. You know, Margaret Thatcher said herself that they pushed her out because basically she was prime minister and she was very powerful. She was very powerful as far as standing up to the globalists. And she gave a speech, a New World Order speech in Toronto, Canada, to the Fraser Institute after she left office. So like you said, I guess Eisenhower and Thatcher were smart to do this after they left office, but she was forced out of office for not standing or not bending over to the New World Order. So people think that we're making this stuff up about the globalists, but they're too caught up on Democrat versus Republican and conservative versus liberal, and they're not looking behind the curtain, Paul, are they?
No, I can't remember the name of the article, but this was just published recently by one of the news services. Somebody went and invested a tremendous amount of time looking at the, it was either the 50 or 100 most powerful corporations in the world.
Yep.
And it turns out that there's a term I remember from business school called interlocking directorates. And interlocking directorates, for those of your listeners who may not know, is basically where board members from Company A also sit on the board of Company B and maybe Company C, and they serve to provide that these directors attempt to have these three corporations, if it's three, become somewhat synergistic, and that they kind of coordinate their efforts and their policies in complementary fashion to maximize their either influence or profit. And I think I have maintained for a number of years that the number of people who control things in all these societies around the world are relatively few in number.
Oh, yeah.
They're relatively few in number because this article kind of gave me a lot of ammo because they said that this particular group controls something like 60 or 70% higher wealth in the world. In the world.
I know, Paul. And the thing is, you would think, look at things like the Federal Reserve. I've just been harking on about their 100th anniversary. We mourn it. We don't celebrate the anniversary. We mourn the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve. You look at groups like the World Trade Organization and the Rockefellers, the man himself with the financial institution. You look at the EU, look at the UN. You look at these corporate oil conglomerates. They surely couldn't belong to the same group and organization, could they, Paul, as the leading politicians in the media? Well, they do, and I've done shows about this. They all belong to the Bilderberg group. And I was doing shows on these Blog Talk airwaves back in the 2012 primaries when I said, look what's going to come up here. We're going to have in Chantilly, Virginia, the Bilderberg group, and you watch. They're going to decide whether Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton is going to win that primary and go ahead and win the presidency. We knew it wasn't going to be Mitt Romney. And basically what happened, Paul? Do you remember the day back during the elections, in the primary elections, where all of a sudden Obama and Hillary both disappeared one day and nobody knew where they were? Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely. Yeah, I do, Dale.
And they even had whoever the crony was in charge of the press corps at the time even took the media up on a plane and they thought they were going to see Obama, and the plane got in the air before they announced to them that Obama wasn't on the plane. And this is the same time that the Bilderbergers were meeting in Chantilly, Virginia. And again, if people doubt me, go look it up. In the late 80s, the Bilderberg group, some people within their own group, wondered why in the world is this guy coming to speak to our group. In the late 80s, a little-known Southern governor came and spoke to the Bilderberg group, and his name was William Jefferson Clinton. In the late 80s, he had just become governor of Arkansas. Let me just say this real quick. In the early 90s, you had a relatively unknown spokesman for the United Kingdom Labour Party invited, and his name was Tony Blair. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I don't know that the listeners of your audience in particular need to necessarily go and double-check whether or not you're reporting the facts accurately.
But there's people out there we want to get the show to.
Your audience are willing to accept the fact that you have done a fairly good job of research and that you're reporting the facts, okay? The question,
right,
I think, that all members of your audience, as well as the American population at large, is I think a lot of the sheeple out there simply don't want to believe that this kind of dastardly stuff is actually going on during their lifetime.
It can never happen here, Paul. Have you heard that one
before? It can never happen here.
It can never happen here.
And
we can never have terrorism. We can never have a blowing up buildings in our country, Paul.
They need to learn in the public indoctrination camps, because this is the formula that has been successfully used by the globalists in multiple countries over hundreds of years. So,
that's why I brought up Margaret Thatcher, because she was not a globalist. And when she wouldn't dance for them, she wouldn't do the right puppeteering moves that the marionette string pullers wanted, they ousted her and replaced her with John Major. And this was confessed by Thatcher in conversations with Jim Tucker, who wrote the book on the Bilderberg. She told them that they forced her out because she wouldn't bow to the Bilderberg in the New World Order. So, again, just have to look at the history. She gave speeches after she left office about the New World Order. Eisenhower, as Paul has pointed out eloquently, warned us about it, the industrial complex of the military, in his farewell speech. The difference was JFK and Ronald Reagan trying to warn people early on. They both got shot. And, again, if you look at this, look at the history of the Federal Reserve, you look at the history of the Bilderberg and the Trilaterals, who were the only two presidents in the last 100 years to be shot? Kennedy and Reagan. I don't think it's a coincidence, but again, go ahead.
A long time ago, I would have scoffed a little bit at something like that, but having done my own independent research, just like you have, I think that there is something to be said for that, because what we are not hearing is from the parties that are in power. We're not necessarily getting the standard denial on that, which I think is kind of fascinating.
they don't deny it. It's just called crazy. You know, it's like the old first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win.
Yeah, we're clearly on that path. There's no doubt.
They've ignored us for a long time. Then, I mean, when I say they, that can be anybody from the globalists down to the people who run the local Republican Party in Louisville. Then they laughed at us. And we've seen for the last several years, they fought us. And as I've said several times, even our good friend Ed Martin, who does his show on Monday and Tuesday nights with Ed Springman, as I told Ed Martin, I've heard him quote me and say it, these old neocon dinosaurs don't live forever. Dinosaurs die out after a while. They die off. They don't live forever. And then the young blood come in. And that's why I have hope for the system, if you will, or the parties. And trust me, you and I have talked about how little hope there is in the parties, especially, and more over the system.
Well, the Republicans, the Republicans are, I think the only way that they're going to be salvaged, that party is going to be salvaged, is if local groups decide to commandeer and take over their local parties. Because I don't see much hope at the national level, not when you got the likes of your one of the guys that you talk about a lot, Mitch McConnell, and his ilk telling everyone, rebel faction of the Republicans, which they call the Tea Party or the libertarian-minded folks, that they need to be brought back into line. Well, damn, doesn't that sound a lot like a totalitarian arrangement? You've got to vote the party line. You know, and that puts the focus on what's best for the party and not what's best on the country. And along those lines, let me just mention a billboard that I just saw. It hasn't been up that long. Out here in my neck of the woods near Outer Loop and New Cut Road westbound, there's a small billboard that was put up by a group called DitchMitch.org. And the billboard focuses on, its message is rather, it's short and sweet. It talks about the percentage of times that Mitch voted against Democrats.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't, organizations like this are nothing more than an extension of the party, because, again, the focus is on the party retaining power, not the people. So, you know, anyone out there listening who's a Democrat and begins to think that they are better than the Republicans, you might want to stash that sanctimony for another day and another time, because the Democrats are just as big a part of the problem as the Republicans are.
Well, they are, and I went out and looked at ditchmitch.org, and, of course, they start out by lying on there. On ditchmitch.org, they say, because we live in a democracy, which we're not, we don't live in a democracy, we live in a republic, and they say, we offer a platform to all with an opinion and a voice. Tea Party members appear to be 25% of voters. Don't know where they got that number. So, therefore, one-fourth of our website will be devoted to you. And then they start talking about altruism, blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing, Paul. I'm glad you brought up McConnell, because I'm going to do an informal survey here just between me and our good friend Paul here from Stop It, Stop Invisible Taxes. Paul, how long roughly have you lived in Louisville, the area?
I've been a lifelong resident, which totals 63 years.
So I'm sure you are very aware, I was going to say the fall, we haven't gotten to the fall of Mitch McConnell yet, but the rise of Mitch McConnell, I'm sure you're very aware where he went from the very short period of time that he actually lived here after he moved here in high school and after he worked his way up under Marlo Cook and worked his way into D.C. under judges and then became judge executive back in the 80s. I'm sure you recall that.
I do remember him being Jefferson County judge. He was a short fellow then, and he's a short fellow now.
Yeah, with no lips.
At least most politicians,
you know, they're lying because their lips to move, and he doesn't have any lips. But I guess the question I want to ask about McConnell, since you know plenty about his rise to power, and he's been now in the Senate going on 30 years next year, Paul. If he gets reelected, he will be going on his finishing up what would be 36 years in the U.S. Senate. That's that citizen legislator, right? So my question is, being that you've lived in Louisville pretty much the entire time he's been a U.S. Senator, how many times have you ever seen Mitch McConnell in the area, Paul?
Well, that's a good question, because let me just make a disclosure to your listeners. I am reasonably politically active, at least for about the last 10 years.
Yep.
And I've attended both Republican as well as Democrat and Libertarian and other independent-type operations and get-togethers.
Yep.
And I can honestly say that the ones that I have attended, I have never seen or heard Mitch McConnell at. Never.
And, Paul, I can take that baton from you and run with it, because I was very active, as you know, in the Republican Party. Hell, everybody knows, I've said this on the airwaves, that there was only two reasons I stay in the Republican Party. One, to vote in the primaries, because they fund those private primaries with everybody's money. And because, two, they haven't found a way to kick my ass out. They can't do it. So I've been very involved in the party for years and years. I was chairman of the Young Republicans here in Louisville a long, long time ago in a land far away. And I even got a Lifetime Achievement Award for the state Young Republicans. And I can tell you, Paul, I've probably seen Mitch McConnell in person. I can count on two hands in my 40 years of life how many times I've seen Mitch McConnell in person, as involved as I was in the party. So what does that tell you as somebody who pulls the strings? But see, when you watch a puppet show, you don't ever see the puppeteers, do you? He's always hiding behind the curtain. We just talked about the curtain. So you're never going to see the puppet master show up in front of the curtain, are you?
No. And Mitch is following the same kind of plan that John Yarmuth follows, and that is,
yep,
with Yarmuth, both of these guys only appear at events and functions in which it is relatively safe for them, and I'm not talking about physical security, I'm talking about where they're not likely to meet anyone who is opposed to their courses of action. I mean, they're very selective about that. Both parties on the big fundraiser events, they're very careful. They screen the attendees. They screen them. So even if you've got the money to pony up and are willing to pony up that money, if you're on their list of people who they don't want in there, you won't get in. You simply won't get in.
Well, and that's going to change. And, again, I keep asking what's going to happen if McConnell were to lose this primary. And we have all these people saying, oh, well, Matt Bevin's not going after the liberals. Why is the guy going after McConnell? And I just had to have a discussion with some of these neocons who should know better, because Mitch McConnell has a creepy new political ad out. Have you seen a new political ad out that supposedly is a Merry Christmas wish from Mitch McConnell?
No.
It's creepy. It's creepy. It's the same kind of little PR things you see banks and airlines do, trying to pretend like they're wishing a Merry Christmas when they're just trying to get their own name out. And I had these neocons say, where is Matt Bevin's ads that include attacks against the liberals? Why is he only going after McConnell? So I had to slap them around, metaphorically speaking, and explain to them, because Bevin is dealing with the big government primary opponent, Mitch McConnell's job, and that's how the political system works. You have the primary first, and then you have the general election. And these elections are very important, Paul, and we are probably here at the My View Matters Network, here are the guys that do these shows with Ed and Ed on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday when Ed and I do the show, and me on Thursday, and our good friend Ken Moman with Liberty Unbridled on Sunday. Who else is telling people about all the candidates? How many people out there, this show notwithstanding, of course, in our listenership, how many people out there know that there are actually three Republicans running for U.S. Senate, three Democrats running at this time, we could have more, and a Libertarian and an Independent. But all we hear about is McConnell, Lundgren, Grimes, McConnell, Lundgren, Grimes. So I'm kind of sick of that, and we haven't even gotten past the primary. So I guess as I get done just rambling here, Paul, and as we're getting close to the time for me to do closing rants, do you have any hope for 2014 when it comes to liberty and smaller government? Give our audience your kind of opus here on what you see or believe or fear for 2014, Paul.
Well, part of the reason, and I'm gonna pick on the Republicans because they've given me the best recent example to use, and that is their national leadership fussing about those members of Congress who have Libertarian and Tea Party leanings, how they need to force them to get back in line. I think that is highly indicative, along with what I heard today from this Thomas Hartman guy about the all these different movements. In fact, he actually alluded to the Tea Party movement and the Occupy movement. All of this stuff, I think, indicates a continually growing dissatisfaction with the status quo in our political system. And my only question that I ever have is, when is the change going to happen, not if? It's a matter of when, because the history of this country and the history, we see it globally, we see it over in Egypt, the history of any country where the political system has failed miserably usually leads to a major change in that system. Then the question becomes, does the change happen with bloodshed or without bloodshed? And again, my crystal ball is still a little bit cloudy on when and how, but it's going to be inevitable because, as former President John F. Kennedy, a Democrat, said that about that, those who make change impossible will make sure that change becomes inevitable. So if they want to keep fooling with it, I really don't think that they completely understand what they're playing with. I really, really don't. But, you know, that's a short-term view. That's what they have. It's only, you know, what do we need to do to win the next election? And the hell with everything else. And that's why we need change now.
That's very well said, Paul. I appreciate it. And folks, Paul is right on the pulse of what's going on here. And that's going to be the question, not a matter of if, but when. And we know that people want freedom and not this quote-unquote fake security. And here comes CNN. CNN claimed this week that Americans want security over freedom. And that just really pissed me off, because when Jake Tapper gets on there and says, I think the American people, honestly, want security over freedom. Well, let's contrast that with what Benjamin Franklin said. Benjamin Franklin said, any society that would give up a little liberty to gain a little security would deserve neither and lose both. And that right there demonstrates perfectly how far that we have fallen culturally. And when you look at what Franklin said and things that Thomas Jefferson said, you give up this freedom, you give up this liberty because you want security. Be sovereign. Don't be part of this BS. How else can you explain the American people allowing our country to get so far out of control? How else can you explain how deeply in control of the banks and mega corporations and the fascists that we are? And we're not trying to discount the tragedies of what happened in September of 2001, September 11th, but just look at how small and limited an attack that was compared to the years of warfare that it was used to justify. Who got the most out of that one operation? Who probably couldn't keep their panties dry, just itching to do it again? The Americans choosing the security over freedom, the end result is that they get neither. And the folks who benefited the most from that were the New World Order. And people are basically coming right out with their decision to accept whatever mark the globalists want to feed them. Line up, take the mark. Folks, the U.S. Constitution is the land of the law in the United States. There are times when we practice civil disobedience, and that is done carefully and on the basis that obedience to the government is disobedience to God. George Washington. Don't be fooled by any man, folks. When you have these fake preachers telling you that you need to be obedient to government authority is real. And if a police officer orders you to pull over, and there should be a reason for that. And if the government offers you to a submission and they ask you to submit to an ordinance, there should be a need for the submission. But it started according to the Constitution. If you go against someone's life, liberty, or property, you've committed a crime against your fellow man. Think back about to the original crimes, folks, the only three original crimes. We see how they feel about treason. We see how treasonous they have been. And we see how they feel about money and how they've destroyed the money. It's your move, folks. Are you going to bow down and worship the New World Order, or are you going to stand up and be a sovereign? Good night.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.